Welcome to Dakota Midday. I'm Lori Walsh. October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. You might have noticed the sea of pink around you on Facebook and the NFL and in the local Target as you shop. Every year we see innovation in breast cancer treatment, but some steps on the journey remain unchanged. SDPB's healthcare reporter Keely Biltina joins us now with more. Keely, welcome back to Dakota Midday.
Thanks, Lori.
You're bringing us some conversations today.
Right.
Essentially. Tell me what you've been digging into this month with breast cancer research and care.
So I don't know if you've noticed, but breast cancer is kind of a big issue. Mm-hmm. All cancers are a big issue. Everybody's challenge with it is different. Everybody's journey is different. And so when I'm looking at this month that is dedicated to acknowledging and making people aware of breast cancer, I just thought, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to tell all of these stories. And how much time are you going to give me? Not enough, okay? Even if we dedicated the whole month to it, it's not enough to reach all of these people. So we want to help you understand how different people in different stages of this disease are harnessing their own power. Because cancer is one of those things that when you get that diagnosis, you feel like you are stripped of something that is inherently making you human. And these different women that we talked to today are doing the exact opposite of that. They just won't let that happen.
Where do you want to begin?
Let's start at the end. So that's always a good place to start, right? So let's start with an opportunity. Both lots of different hospitals offer wigs to cancer patients. Breast cancer patients are one of the top kinds of patients that wind up with wigs because the type of chemotherapy they use causes all of this widespread hair loss. So we talked with a woman who's been doing this for a long time and fitting people with wigs at Avera. Her name is Del Lomheim, and you walk into her little studio, and there's this mirror with these lights. It's like backstage at some sort of theater, and then she has this wall of wigs, and she's just really interesting. So you can hear from Deb Lomheim first, and then patient Carla Tuttle.
12 wigs in each row, and like I said before, each of those is a different haircut or a different style. And each of them comes in probably 10 to 15 different colors, or maybe more than that, probably more colors than that. So we get our style first. Once we get our style, we'll pick our color. And then I order it in and help her with the fitting. The chemo they're taking makes their hair fall out. I know that it's devastating. It's probably one of the hardest things about going down that journey of cancer is the hair loss for a woman, because it's our identity, really. So as soon as somebody is diagnosed, they set an appointment, they come in to see me. If I'm lucky enough to see their hair before they've lost it, I can usually pinpoint 1 to 3 wigs that is probably going to match up with their liking or with what they have then.
And it's amazing how well she does do as far as picking out the wig and making you feel like it is a normal. And I said what was so amazing the whole time I wore that wig out to different activities and things, everybody thought it was my own hair. So I said that also makes you feel good knowing that you do look normal.
When you lose the hair, looking in the mirror in the morning before you put your wig on or any makeup on, it's like looking at a stranger. Because there's somebody looking back that you've not seen before. I, all my life, had terrible, skinny, rotten hair. And so I think that's why I went into hairstyling. And my mom and aunts have had to wear wigs. So it's just been part of our life, not having very nice hair. So I was always amazed how you could have instant gratification by just putting on hair. And then once I went through treatment, even with my yucky hair, when the doctor said, we're going to have to do chemo to get you better, I go, oh, am I going to lose my hair? And I hated my hair. So, but even if you have bad hair, it's hard to lose because it's part of you. I said, if I wouldn't have had my wigs and had known how to put makeup on, I probably would have stayed in bed for a year because it just is so
depressing.
Hard.
Yeah, very depressing. Yeah. It's amazing when your hair does come back in. Curly, curly, curly. I mean, we're talking tight curl. I remember a guy that I worked with, he said, I just cannot get over your curly hair. And he would pull it up, and I bet it was probably about 1.5 to 2 inches long, but it just clung to your hair. But, you know, eventually after you get that first cut, and then it goes back to natural.
Because that wasn't what your hair was like before.
Oh, no, not that curly. No. Nope. I might have a little body in my hair, but not that curly. So they always get a kick out of my curly hair, so.
It's difficult to articulate what a woman's hair means to her, and it feels almost strange to be talking about it out loud. But in that conversation, you hear it. I would have stayed in bed for a year if I didn't. It is. I'm almost stumped at that moment, and then they say it so clearly.
Right, absolutely. Because we often talk about things like makeup or doing your hair as this sort of vanity. Mm-hmm. That's not what it is for women who are going through treatment for breast cancer. This is an issue of being human and being a woman. And this is their entire identity. And there are more studies that show that there's some women opt out of some of those treatments for fear that their hair is going to fall out because they know that. So they would rather not do the treatment than have their hair fall out. And that is just something they'd like to avoid. And if people can maintain this ability to know who they are because of their hair, then why not? It seems like a no-brainer. It's incredible. You know,
it's how your children recognize you.
It is, yeah.
You hear it from your life partners are talking about your hair is it starts at a young age. When you have a daughter, they say, oh, she has such beautiful hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's deeply cultural.
Absolutely. What I love about this is that Dell is so open about the fact that she has gone through this, and mm-hmm. she thinks that that gives her a little bit of an edge because she knows what that's like. The other thing that really struck me about that studio is that they have 50-some-odd wigs, and each of the wigs has a name, and I love it because yeah. it's not like a normal name. It's like, let me read some of them. Cheer, Carefree, Conviction, Power, Pitch Perfect, Boost, Aspire, like all of these names full of potential. And I just love that because I, you know, in this industry, I tend to associate a lot of importance with words. And
sure.
so to yeah. know that your wig has a name and to gain more power from that, I just think is incredible.
I love it. All right, let's go on to our next conversation. This is somebody who's helping another woman navigate the journey of breast health care during a cancer diagnosis. Is that where you want to go next?
Absolutely. Breast cancer survivors, people going through breast cancer treatment, it's certainly a building of this network of people, but really it's this network of women. Absolutely, there are men involved and who are experts or who have breast cancer, but it's primarily this network of women. And at Sanford Health, they have nurse navigators who basically, they're just there for the patients, for questions, for comfort, to get you the right phone number if you're overwhelmed, to help you understand what's going on. And I just want to showcase Gloria Topp. She's a nurse navigator, and you'll also hear from a patient. Her name is Leah.
A lot of times I see an overwhelmed patient, one that is scared, not overly talkative, fighting back tears. Just a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah.
The unknown is far worse than knowing and then knowing what I have to do.
I think when I was first diagnosed with breast cancer and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have this overabundance of pink in my life now, and it made me not comfortable. Like, I did not want to be part of that group. But I've come to kind of accept that as part of my life now and look at it as a symbol of hope more than I ever understood it before.
With each patient, I give them a pink bracelet, and I tell them that this is my symbol of hope and survivorship for them. I tell them when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, I hated pink, did not want anything pink, and I did not want to join that club, but found out in a hurry we don't have a choice in what's dealt to us in life. We only have a choice in our response.
And I actually think I still have that bracelet that she gave me, and it's actually still in the case that I carry with me to all my appointments. I elected for the double mastectomy just because of the positive receptors, so the chance of it coming back was higher. Upon the double mastectomy, they found cancer in the left breast also that was so small that the mammogram wouldn't have ever found it. So going with the double mastectomy was definitely the best choice. I'm currently doing chemotherapy. I've had one round, and my second round is next week. Everybody's journey is different. People need to be respectful of that. A lot of people kind of pass judgment, and they question whether or not why I was doing a double mastectomy when I first told some of my friends. Are like, well, why are you doing that? That's so drastic. I'm like, that's what I feel I need to do, and thank goodness I did. But, I mean, just everybody be respectful of the journey that person's taking and don't make judgments.
And that's, I think, so key that we can remember. And you never say, well, this is what I did, this is what I think you should do. No, it is so individual. And people make their choices for different reasons. And so that's why I always stress that there's not a right or a wrong. You are given options, and then you carry through your options with the different reasons. But I always tell them, too, that they will not be given a choice that is not safe for them.
Things you need to know about both of these women. Leah was diagnosed because she had her first ever mammogram at 40. Hmm. Her mastectomy surgery was at the end of August of this year, so this is brand new. She had planned to shave her head this weekend. I'm not sure if she was able to, but because just in the photo that we have online of her, she still has her original hair, but so much of it was falling out that she knew that it was time. But she was kind of on the fence because she said her daughter's confirmation was coming up. And so, you know, we're back to the hair discussion. Also, Gloria, who is the navigator, had a completely different job before she got breast cancer and worked in that job after she, you know, beat breast cancer. And she says she just couldn't shake the feeling that she was restless and needed to do more and to give back to people in the same situation, which is why she switched from ophthalmology into a nurse navigator position.
Incredible choices that people are making when the choice is not theirs.
Absolutely.
And that goes back to the sort of notion of empowerment. Some things are dealt to you, but other things you get to choose. You get to choose what happens next.
And you get to choose what happens next for your career, for your hair. You also get to choose what happens next when you are diagnosed and you are dealing with all of these different treatment options. Because professionals, these medical professionals do give you options. And Avera has a really interesting option that's available to some breast cancer patients. We can tell you about it. It's called IORT. It's radiation that they use while in surgery. And you will first hear from a patient who went through this when it was still in clinical trials about 18 months ago. Her name is Lou Rice, and she's from Madison. And you'll also hear from Dr. Julie Ryland.
See how bad it was, probably a mastectomy. You're going to have to do radiation or chemo or both, whatever, you know, and then rebuild, start over. And that takes time. I'm thinking, boy, the next year and a half is just shot, you know. And then you started explaining about doing the intraoperative radiation and the surgery and da da. And I'm thinking, well, that sounds like a whole lot better than what I was planning.
And a lot of them can be very well behaved, which means that they are not aggressive and that removing them and radiating them and maybe going on a pill is all you need. And that's so different than what people think. They imagine that they're going to be sick, they're going to have chemo, they're going to be throwing up, and they're going to lose their breasts, they're going to lose their hair, all that stuff. And that does happen in some of those breast cancers that are really aggressive, but a lot of them aren't aggressive, and a lot of them don't need to be treated that way. I take out the breast cancer, and I use incisions that a plastic surgeon would use if he were going to give you a breast lift. So I can get rid of the extra skin that creates that defect if you don't fix the hole. I fix the defect, make the breast sit up higher, make them more firm, make them look a little bit perky. I call them perky.
Yes,
perkier.
They are.
Before I close the skin, we bring a radiation machine in, and we treat the area where the cancer was with a dose of radiation. The entire amount of radiation that a woman needs in 6 weeks, she can get in 2 minutes using this machine.
Yeah, I've told tons of people about it. I'm always blabbing about it when they ask, how did it go? Well, I'll tell you how it went. It was fabulous. I was amazed. You still go through the emotions, you know. I think the first couple of months after surgery, it was like I was a wreck, but you heal, you get better, and yeah, it's just amazing.
Some fairly innovative things happening right here in South Dakota for treatment.
Right, and Lou is from Madison, so although it may not be a complete hardship, it would have been an absolute inconvenience to come to Sioux Falls 5 days a week for 6 weeks for 30, 45 minutes at a time to get radiation. And it's that constant reminder that your time is not your own. that you are sacrificing all of this time. And so the fact that they can do this makes a big difference to people like Lou, but also people who live even farther away from these centers where they could get radiation, where they may physically not be able to get there every day, 5 days a week for 6 weeks. It doesn't apply to absolutely everybody, but it's out of clinical trial. It's now a part of a standard of care for some cancer. And Avera is one of the few places in the nation that does this very specific kind of IORT. So,
is every kind of breast cancer treatment that we're looking at right now like that? Innovative, new stuff we've never heard of before?
There are lots of treatments that are innovative. There are also lots of tools that physicians use that are less tech-friendly, technology-driven, I guess. Dr. Julie Ryland, one of her favorite tools, is more rudimentary than the technology we're talking about.
My rock is triangular, it's irregular, it's jagged, and it's my favorite color, blue, with some white in it. So I'm not quite sure what kind of rock it is, but and so I tell people when I didn't have my rock, I would say, imagine something that's more like gravel, something that if you were to step on it, it would hurt the bottom of your foot. So how do you describe what a breast cancer feels like? And well, I've seen lots of them and I've been in the operating room and I've felt lots of them. How do I describe it? And it came to me that if you can imagine putting a rock under your skin, what would that feel like? You can't feel the real sharpness, but you can kind of get a sense that it's not round and smooth, right? Now, breast tissue is fatty and compressible. When you compress fat, it flattens out, but a rock won't flatten. Because it's a rock. And another expression I say is, think that maybe there's a rock under your tablecloth on a very nice table and you don't want to scratch it. So how would you find that rock? You would pat the tablecloth looking for the rock. Because I used to walk around the parking lots from between the hospital, and every time I would see a 1 centimeter rock, I'd pick it up. And I'm like, okay, I think I need prettier rocks than the gravel rocks outside.
First of all, great visual of wandering around in the parking lots, right?
Right.
Sticking these rocks in your white coat pocket. But also this amazing ability that these professionals have to try to calm women down. Because even if we don't have breast cancer, there is this fear, there is this concern that when you find something that you don't recognize or you feel something that you didn't know was there, there's a panic. Mm. And she's like, don't panic. Let me help you. So I feel like there is a lesson there for everybody, even if you're not a breast cancer patient.
A stunning metaphor. And we all know someone, if we haven't been affected by it or aren't thinking about possibly being affected by it, we know someone who has been on this journey, some great success stories and some great losses in our lives as well.
It's inspirational for us to look to these stories where people have made their own rules and they were unyielding to the cancer and everything worked out great and now they are cancer-free and we use this word cure. And that works out in a lot of cases and it's not always in others. So I want to bring us back to Carla Tuttle. She was the person who had cancer in 2000 and was working with Dell on the wig right at the beginning of the story. When I met her last week, she had a short asymmetrical cut. She was blonde with kind of dark roots and side-swept bangs. And that, too, was a wig because her cancer is back. Mm. And she now is dealing with inoperable cancer, and that's just part of her story.
This time around, it's still breast cancer, but it's in my liver, so we had to go to the stronger drug, and that's where it makes you feel sick, and so far so good. I haven't gotten that part yet, but at least I know I have this wig to help me feel a little bit more normal and can still go about my daily business and go out and enjoy my grandkids, and my grandkids aren't going to be shocked because I got four grandsons, and I said the other three have already been kind of through it, but the youngest one, who's 2, has not. So I said, that's going to be hard for me when he doesn't recognize grandma anymore, you know.
Keely, I don't even know what to say coming out of that.
None of these women are letting cancer win, even if they can't fight the cancer fully, even if they know it's never going away. They're not going to yield to it. They're not going to give the cancer the authority. That's not what's going to happen here. And it doesn't matter if it's through a wig or a choice in surgery or a new treatment or an old treatment. That's just not what they're willing to do.
Keely Bettina, thank you so much for your time today. We appreciate all of the people that you spoke with, and we appreciate you.
You're welcome.